Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On August 1st of this year, just 1 week after the World Health Organization declared an end to the 9th Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the 10th struck. Situated in North Kivu province, Mangina is now the epicenter of the deadly outbreak. In just over a month, more than 130 people have been infected and 90 have died. Health officials say they have made progress slowing the virus's spread with experimental vaccines and treatments, but they cannot be sure the situation is under control due to difficulties accessing some areas. On the program today, we will look at the ongoing Ebola outbreak in the DRC. And for more insights on the Ebola epidemic, we are joined via phone from Walkersville, Maryland, in the eastern United States, by Dr. Malonga Nyatudila. He is Senior Public Health Specialist and International Consultant. Dr. Nyatudila was part of the team who first discovered the Ebola virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 1976. Dr. Malonga, welcome to Health Chat.
Thank you for helping me again.
It's so good to have you back. And we will start our conversation in a moment with Dr. Malonga. But first, the World Health Organization's Emergency Response Chief, Peter Salamas, shares his thoughts on the efforts to contain the current epidemic.
On the scale of degree of difficulty, trying to extinguish an outbreak of a deadly high-threat pathogen in a war zone reaches the top of any of our scales. The good news is that we do have, although it's still an investigational product, a safe and effective vaccine that we were able to deploy last time round. But remember, last time round, and this is a critical point, we had really large-scale access, despite the logistical constraints, to be able to do the contact tracing.
And again, Dr. Malonga, thank you for joining us. So basically, the outbreak is ongoing in the DRC, and you are monitoring the situation closely with health authorities in North Kivu, where the outbreak is ongoing. What are the latest developments with the infection?
Yes, as you said, we have the situation as of September 8th, meaning 3 days ago. As you said, 131 cases have been diagnosed, out of which 100 were confirmed, meaning that they did the lab test and it came back positive. 90 people have died, unfortunately.
Okay.
So far. So that's the situation.
And this is happening in 7 health zones, right, in the region?
It's happening in two provinces, in the province of North Kivu, in 7 health zones, mm-hmm. and in one additional zone in the Ituri province. That makes a total of health zones that are currently attacked of Ebola.
So let me ask you this. The DRC has experienced several outbreaks in the past. As I mentioned earlier, there were 9, then we went to 10. And the country has had a very successful history in terms of containing outbreaks. However, this one is raising some concerns. It seems to be taking longer. What is happening?
What is happening? What is special to the region is that it's in North Kivu. This is the region where you have a large number of armed groups. Mm-hmm. So the security poses some problems. It's a challenge to go in the region where you have armed groups. And in addition to that, you have also a lot of internally displaced people. So these are two additional challenges in a very difficult country. So that makes it a little bit special.
So then in a situation like this, where you have high level of insecurities, what are the authorities doing? How are they handling the situation?
Same recipe, meaning that they should make everything possible to involve local communities communities, local leaders, be there on the side of the government or on the other side. So at the end, it's what the local communities, the local leaders are going to do, which is going to make the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about the role of local communities, it's something that you are very passionate about. You strongly advocate. In our past conversations, you talked about it. Now let's delve into what we are really talking about when we say local communities have to be involved. Yeah, we understand, but what does it really mean? What are we expecting from them, given that, you know, whether it's Ebola is so virulent, but even other diseases or, you know, crises, they talk about the involvement of local community. In the case of Ebola, what do we expect from the local communities?
Actually, what I'm expecting, let me start by the external support. What I'm expecting and what I've been always telling the people from Kinshasa or even people from the provincial level is to make sure that they are not going to substitute, because the temptation is, we are the technicians, we know what the problem is, so we are asking you people to accept our intervention. No. What they should be doing, is to tell the people that you have a problem and the solution is in your hands. We can provide you the support, we can provide you the information. In this case, we can provide with treatment, we can provide with vaccination, but the solution is in your hands. Okay, now, when you say you, what are you talking? You are talking to the leaders, because it's very difficult. It's very difficult for somebody coming from Geneva, even from Kinshasa, to just have the trust of the people, because they see you as somebody from a stranger. So they're not going to listen to you because they don't trust you. So you have to go through the people that patients or communities or villagers or locals really trust. These can be the pastors, the priests,
the chief, the queen mother, leader, traditional leaders.
Anybody who has the teachers, anybody who has the trust of the community. So you have to pass through those people. Unless you have that trust, you are not going to go a long way.
So once we are able to have these agents of trust, if you will, right? If they are able to have these community leaders, people they can relate to or they can trust. You talked about solution. The solution is in your hand when you talked about the community's role. What are these solutions? What solutions are we talking about? What exactly are the people supposed to do?
Yeah. The first thing is the first treatment, the first strategy to control Ebola. Remember, Ebola is a contagious disease. So the treatment should be isolation.
Okay.
Or at least to reduce the contact with people who are infected. So if you do that, you stop the spread of the virus. So that's something that the community can do.
Okay.
You don't need to have, you don't need to bring people from outside to do that. But for that, you need the trust. You need to provide the information to the community, to leaders, and then you hold them responsible from the results.
Okay, so isolation is one. Okay. What else are we looking into? I know that when we talk about Ebola, they talk about hygiene, people washing their hands. They talk about the handling of dead people. They talk about, you know, even shaking their hand. People's habit, social habits could be shifted or adjusted. So some of these steps that I wanted you to elaborate on, please.
So these are the starting by isolation. Isolation first, you isolate the community that is infected. So what you saw in the past, we used to call it, would talk about quarantine. Mm-hmm. So you quarantine the area which is infected. So you avoid people, you prevent people from outside from coming to the community. Now, within the community, you isolate the patients, so you reduce the contacts with the people. If you have to take care of a parent who is sick, you better protect yourself wearing, I don't know, gloves or anything that you can. If you touch your parent, then you wash your hands. So this is what I call isolation at the community level and at the personal level.
Mm-hmm. And now let's go back to the basics, okay? I wanted us to go to the basics in terms of understanding Ebola as a medical condition, as a disease. I think there are a lot of misconceptions when we hear Ebola. There have been movies in the past that were talking about sicknesses and people related it to Ebola, and people are scared when they hear Ebola. So could you please explain to us this condition, how virulent it is, and even though we know it's contagious, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, how people can protect themselves. But we really want to understand. One of the things that you have told me when we talked in the past is the fact that, yes, it is contagious, but it can be prevented, as opposed to, for example, the flu that you can get, which is airborne, you know. So if you can just give us a sense of what is Ebola, really?
Ebola is, as I said, the contagious disease. There's a disease that you get if you come in contact with a person. To get the flu from, you are in the plane or in the bus, and you don't have to touch the person who is sick, because that's an airborne disease. Mm-hmm. Ebola is a disease that you can only get if you are in contact with the fluid
of
the patients. So that makes it actually easier. It's not Ebola is not that contagious as flu, as I said. So you need to do something particular to get the disease. It's not just by shaking the hand of a person who has Ebola that you get it. You have to be in what do you call it, in some intimate contact, the type of contact that a nurse or a physician has with the patients. Mm-hmm. So you need that contact. Once you get the virus, then you are in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because you have more than 65% of, I would say, chance to die.
Okay. It may be difficult, well, not difficult, but it may not be as easy to catch. But once you catch it, then it's challenging to take care of it. But there is some good news. Just like Mr. Salama of the WHO talked about earlier, you know, we know there is an experimental vaccine that has been used in the past outbreak and is being used now. There's also experimental treatments. Tell us about some of the good news, and what are your thoughts?
Now, the good news, when we got there in 1976, the good news was, Ebola is not that contagious. So that was the first good news. So if you do isolation that correctly, you can stop. And then the other good news we had in 1976 was that people who survived the disease, they develop
post-Ebola syndrome
antibodies against Ebola.
The virus. Okay, yeah.
Meaning that the serum can be used to treat patients.
Okay.
So that's another good news that we learned in 1976. And I understand that now they've been able to manufacture that protein that protects against Ebola. So we have a treatment using the serum of people who have been infected but survived. Mm-hmm. Now, the third good news is that we have a vaccine that is safe, and mm-hmm. that seems to be protecting patients.
Okay. Well, we like good news indeed. And we will continue our discussion in a minute, Dr. Malonga. We just have to take a short break. So stick around with us, and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes. But before, it is time for the news with Camilla Tam.
Thank you, Lenore. A 6-year-old girl became Mali's first open heart surgery patient on Monday after a successful procedure performed by a team of Malian and French surgeons, a first for the African nation. Fanta Diaha was diagnosed with a heart condition when she was just a baby. She underwent the operation and what medical officials hope will be the first of many such life-saving operations for Malians who previously have had to travel overseas for treatment. The Zimbabwean health minister has declared a cholera emergency in the capital, Harare, after at least 18 people have died. Health authorities say over 2,000 people have been affected by the cholera outbreak. That's being attributed to shortages of safe drinking water and poor sanitation. Tents have been erected at the Beatrice Road Infectious Diseases Hospital to cater for the growing number of patients. Cholera is caused by ingestion of contaminated food or water and can kill within hours if untreated. The UN's Children's Agency says it is assisting Zimbabwe's government with the hygiene and water provisions. The United Nations Children's Fund warning that the large number of extreme weather events around the world are putting children in immediate danger and jeopardizing their futures. UNICEF says while individual weather events cannot specifically be attributed to climate change, the increase in frequency and severity of extreme weather, including recent high temperatures, intense rains, and slow-moving weather fronts, are in line with predictions of how human activities are affecting the global climate. The fund says such events could cause death and devastation and could also contribute to the increased spread of major killers such as malnutrition, malaria, and diarrhea. It stressed that as these extreme climate events are increasing in frequency and magnitude, and the risks to children are likely to outpace global capacity to mitigate them, as well as to provide a humanitarian response. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Back to you, Lenore.
That was the news with Camilla Tam. Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are looking at the Ebola crisis in the DRC with our guest, Dr. Malonga Miatudila, Senior Public Health Specialist and International Consultant. So, Dr. Malonga, let's go back to the beginning. You were there in 1976. Some of us were not born, others were already born, but you were there already dealing with such a great health challenge. What was it like? What was the experience like?
Oh, I can tell you it was awful because we didn't know anything about the disease. It didn't even have a name. So we were sent there to find out what was going on. And then we went there and just what we found is that people were just dying, many, many deaths. And we didn't know how it was being spread and what was the source. So it was awful.
Awful. And it was really, I guess some people will say you were lucky or blessed, depending on how you look at it, because given the fact that it's such a deadly virus, right?
It was a deadly virus, yes.
Mm-hmm. So
it was a fatality rate of 85%.
Now, what I wanted to understand better is the fact that the country has gone through some different outbreaks. Again, we talked about it in the beginning. What are some of the lessons learned? Because I'm thinking at this point, the DRC is definitely an expert in handling, tackling Ebola. And then we saw what happened in West Africa, where it was a tragedy, really. So many people died. And then some people were saying, okay, there is the DRC that has such great experience with dealing with Ebola. Not to go back in the past, but is your strategy in the DRC something particular to your region where it cannot be duplicated? And I know you said this time around, insecurity is one of the challenges, but when we look at what happened in West Africa, where was the DRC involved in tackling that outbreak?
No, that's the problem with West Africa we found. They suffered from denial because they said that we are West Africa, we are not Central Africa. Ebola is a disease of the Central Africa. We are West Africa. Denial. And then the second mistake they made was medicalization. So they said, okay, this is a medical problem, so we are going to bring in physicians, experts, medical people from outside. And then that created rejection from the local community. On top of that, you should remember that in those days, people in some areas were saying that this is a new disease that was created by the white people. Mm. So bringing white people in that region, you can see why we had so much resistance. So denial, because of that, we lost a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And that gave the Ebola virus the time to really spread and to spread large. That's the two mistakes that they made.
Okay, and yeah. Really, this is it's an interesting point, because what you're explaining with the fact that they say, you know, this disease was brought by other groups and everything. It shows the misunderstanding, as you talked about. It shows lack of trust. It shows, I mean, there are so many other reasons. The West African outbreak, there is a lot that can be said about it, and we are not going to expand on it. But definitely there were some lessons learned from that experience. And now, going back to what is happening in the DRC, what is the way forward? Where do we stand now? Now that there is, there seems to be more tools. There is a vaccine, there is experimental treatment, all of it experimental, of course, with the vaccine, I mean. So why is this outbreak being what it is? How do we move forward, I guess? Is there a need to get more communities involved, or are they already being implicated in this outbreak?
They are still facing a problem of resistance. This is what yesterday I told them. Please make sure that you review the way you reach people. Don't go there. Don't send people from the capital of the province to the villages. You have to pass through local people. That's what we have been telling them. I think what we have to understand is that the virus is going to stay with us for some time. We have some weapons, the communication. We have to inform our health practitioners to give them tools to be able to diagnose the cases early diagnosis.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Now, once they diagnose, they have to report to the center that we have a case of Ebola here, and then they have to take the first measures of isolation. If they do that, then we come from the national or national capital or from outside, we come with supplies like vaccines and treatment. Now, I would recommend that in high-risk regions, we should maybe take the approach of vaccinating the population, especially the health providers.
Okay. Now, you said something. You said that Ebola is going to stay with us for a long time. I believe that's what you said, if I'm not mistaken. Why is it so?
Why? Because we are encroaching the habitat of the... we are going into the... where the Ebola lives with bats, with other animals. We are going into the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we are bound to live with them. Mm-hmm. And then we have to use the means that we have now, as I said, vaccination and treatment, and vaccination, preventive vaccination of the population, high-risk population. People have been saying that maybe we should also teach people not to eat bushmeat.
Bushmeat.
Mm-hmm. I think that's. I don't know how we can succeed in that. That's almost impossible.
That's people's cultural, traditional culinary habit. It's hard, huh, to change.
You know, they are going to hunt for bushmeat because in the forest you don't do pastoral activities.
Yeah. So that's a tough one. And I was going to ask you actually, to what extent do cultural practices also affect either outbreak or containment of the outbreak?
Cultural practices we have found can change dramatically if people are informed. For instance, when we were dealing with Ebola in the Yambuku region, people used to make, be in contact with dead bodies because that was the culture. You have to show that you really loved that the person who died, so you have to be in contact with the person who died. And we told them, please, don't do that anymore. And if somebody dies, just bury the person in a proper way, even burn the house. We thought that people are going to resist to that. But once we walked through the local nuns and local traditional, we were really surprised that the culture, this habit, just disappeared in 1 week. So cultural habits can change, especially if you are in a special situation. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as a very difficult constraint, no. Mm-hmm. It can change.
It can change. So in this case,
provided again that you go through the people that communities trust.
Yeah, that's a good point because it's all about trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very important when it comes to community approach, different strategies, whether it's health or other things. History or experience has shown with some observer saying how the role of community trusting the people that they come in contact with is important. So then, Dr. Malonga, let me ask you this before we wrap. What is your message with regards to whether it's this outbreak in particular or Ebola in general? What is your message?
My message is that common sense is something that's more prevalent than we think. Because we experts, we think that we are the only ones who have common sense. But common sense is something natural, something very pervasive in communities. So let's trust the people, and the people are going to trust us.
Mm-hmm. Trust.
Trust is really the medicine.
Okay.
Because Ebola, in addition to the vaccines that we are going to bring, the social vaccine is the first medicine.
Which is trust and community approach. Thank you so much, Dr. Malonga Miatudila. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And that was Dr. Malonga Miatudila. He's Senior Public Health Specialist and International Consultant. He joined us today on the show. And now to all of you listening on Health Chat, we thank you. We thank you for being loyal listeners of Health Chat. If you want to know more about the show, check us out on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we thank all our affiliate stations for carrying our show. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Bonsa Tufa and Camila Tom with the news and our engineer Thomas. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil.